Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to What Goes Up, a Bloomberg Weekly Markets podcast. I'm Sarah Ponsek, a reporter on the Cross Asset team.
And I'm Mike Regan, a senior editor on the markets team.
This week on the show, we've gotten some of the first real reads into the effect of the coronavirus on the economy. It's disheartening to say, but a record 6.6 million people filed for unemployment insurance in the last week, a record by far. While markets remain volatile, resiliency has remained, and that too as oil prices fell to the lowest since 2001.
You know, and Sarah, I feel like we jinxed it by having the craziest thing we saw in markets on the show, because now all of a sudden we're almost a year into the show, and I feel like everything in markets is crazy. We should have just named the podcast The Craziest Things We Saw in Markets This Week, and then it could just be a general market recap. What do you think?
Maybe we should have, although we also did get some when we officially launched the podcast with the name What Goes Up. They said, you know, you're just waiting for what goes down to happen too then.
That's season two. Yeah, that might have jinxed it too. Now, Sarah, before we start talking about the markets and get into and introduce our guests, I'm curious what life is like for you. You've been quarantined there in Manhattan for the duration of this virus. I stopped going into New York City around March 12th. I never thought I'd ever miss that daily commute from New Jersey, but sure enough, strangely, I'm beginning to miss it. But I'm wondering, you know, we have listeners around the world on this podcast. I'm sure a lot of people are as curious as I am as far as what's life like in Manhattan right now in this situation.
You know, it's really strange, especially for the city, and it's really quiet, which when you think of Manhattan, obviously you don't think quiet, but if I were to go to my window right now and just look outside, I likely wouldn't see a single soul. I mean, I try to get outside every now and then to go on walks, but keep my distance, but you can pretty much walk in the middle of the street. There's hardly any cars around, which is so strange to say. Usually you'd see taxis, there'd be plenty of traffic. Now you're walking in the middle of the street to keep your 6 feet distance. But yeah, it's just, there's an eerie feel, especially it rained a lot this week. So it was particularly eerie because there was no one around and it was just gray and rainy. But it's definitely strange. It doesn't feel like the city.
It's such a weird phenomenon. You have these markets in just this spasm of turmoil, and here New York City is quieter than it's ever been. It's just a very surreal experience all around.
It's weird still being here. I can promise you that.
Well, let's get right to the markets then. And I'm happy to introduce a new guest, first time on the show. Her name is Diane Jaffe. She is a senior portfolio manager at TCEW. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
And I don't know where you're quarantining. Maybe you're in the city too.
Not anymore. I was there with Sarah for a while, but now we're in Vermont.
You made the right move.
Oh, nice. Vermont, I think Vermont would be one of my top choices to quarantine in. She get some fresh air and blue skies and everything. So good, wise choice.
They say they social distance all the time in Vermont.
Nothing's changed.
It comes natural, especially if you tell them you're from New Jersey. They keep their distance. I've learned in Vermont. But Diane, let's talk about these crazy markets, because I know you're a value-focused investor. You're senior portfolio manager at TCEW. You manage several funds, or at least on the management committee of several. But I got to say, I've been doing this for many years now. I won't tell everyone how many, because I like to keep the illusion that I'm a young hipster. But I don't think I've ever seen anything like this as far as just the complete unknowns about what the earnings outlook is, what the GDP outlook is. And I know you focus a lot on dividends and dividend growth, where the stable dividends are going to come from, who's going to cut their dividends. So I guess, to make a long question very short, like, how do you do your job in this environment when there's so many unknowns?
Well, luckily, I have a great team of analysts who work with me. We have the largest internal research team on the equity side at TCW with 6 dedicated analysts. And I'm proud to say that our strategies are going to hit their 25-year GIPS compliant track record this month of April. So so we've been through a lot of cycles together. We've worked together for 18 years on average. But you're right. This is different. This is a pandemic. And you can get bits and pieces of information if you go to SARS back in 2003 or Ebola in 2018. But we haven't seen anything like this for over 100 years back to 1918.
It really is unbelievable. And you shared a timeline with us in the notes, and I thought it was really great. It's a stylized timeline. And essentially what you did was you lay out the months and you lay out different areas of where we have passed and what we are looking forward to. So as what we have passed or we're in the midst of, some are consumer panic and social distancing, U.S. cases peak, policymakers act, which have all happened. Now where you say the next test of the market is, that's earnings downgrades. Because even when we look at bottoms up analyst estimates, they really haven't been able to keep up. Right now, they're only estimating pretty much a modest decline in earnings for the year. I mean, what are you guys expecting once we potentially do see those flowing in, or once earnings season does start in a few weeks? What do you expect, and how do you expect the market to take that?
Yeah, I think there will definitely be a retest of the market bottom we saw in the last week of March. I'd like to source a fund strat. They provided that graphic, which is great. And I think it does help give a realistic picture within days or weeks of what we can anticipate. But earnings season will start with the big banks. They're on the front lines of this. And it gives me a lot of comfort just to know that this economic backbone, this the economy, is really in a good place right now, much different than it was in 2008. We've been stress test, we've been CCAR'd, we've been DFAST, and so they're really going to be the front lines here in terms of the conduit for the Treasury and the Fed to reach out to businesses, to reach out to lenders, to reach out to borrowers. And so it'll be very telling what the banks say.
Where do dividends and buybacks typically fit into your investment process? Goldman Sachs had an analysis out saying that already this year, we've seen roughly a quarter of the amount of buybacks we saw last year already pulled by companies. I mean, is this disheartening to you guys, or do you feel as though that's okay because companies have to allocate cash where necessary at this point in time, or maybe keep more cash on their balance sheets?
I think that I'm a big fan of dividends because it not only says that there's good stewardship by the management teams of those companies saying, okay, we've already fulfilled what we need to do for CapEx or new growth opportunities. And so we're returning cash to our shareholders in the form of dividends. And no entity likes to cut or suspend dividends. So they have to think long and hard. In fact, AT&T said the other day that, even before the coronavirus, they were contemplating any kind of black swan event to make sure that those dividends were safe. So for us, dividends are one of our 5 valuation factors. We look at price to book, price to cash flow, price to sales, price to earnings ratio, and dividend yields. And we particularly like it when those dividends can grow over time. So buybacks, I think you have to be very careful with them because, all those buybacks companies made last year or in January, February of this year looked pretty, poor investments.
And I know one of the strategies at TCW is a dividend appreciation fund. And I just have to assume that the universe of companies that are going to be able to increase their dividends this year, maybe even next year, just let's call it the near future, it must be a very swiftly shrinking universe. I mean, where could one possibly look for sort of a dividend aristocrat in this scenario, a company that is able, going to have the strength to be able to increase its dividend? Am I right that's almost very much a dying breed right now?
Right. There are definitely, you know, IBM, right, has been a stalwart provider of dividends. That's a big holding for us. You know, our goal is to give our clients a diversified value portfolio that has capital return plus dividend appreciation. So right now, our yields in the dividend appreciation fund are higher than the S&P and the Russell 1000 value. We do have to be super careful about finding the companies that can definitely. Chevron won't increase its dividend, right? They've already said that, but they're doing everything to preserve their dividend. And that's important to us, that they've been disciplined for the last 5 years here, so that when we do have a pandemic, they are able to continue to provide their shareholders with their dividends. So dividend sanctity as well as appreciation is going to matter now going forward.
Earlier on in the show, Diane, you said that you believe that we would likely retest the lows that we saw back in March in the market. And I bring this up because you guys ran a survey, and in the survey, 75% of respondents said that they believe that what we're seeing now and what we saw particularly last week is a bear market rally and will likely retest the lows. Why are you so sure, or why do you believe that we will retest the lows? And why do you think so many people out there believe the same as well?
It's like Warren Buffett said, that when the tide goes out, you can see who's wearing their bathing suits. And that's what's going to happen with earnings season, right? You know, you might think this company that you own, you know, has the balance sheet and income statement to persevere through this environment. And then reality hits you like a pie in the face. So that's why earnings season will be so super important, because while we won't have a full quarter test, we'll have, you know, the latter half of March for fiscal year quarterly earnings report, but we certainly will start to hear company guidance and for 2020. And I think that's when reality will hit.
Do you love Elon Musk? Do you hate Elon Musk? Do you have no idea what to think about Elon Musk? Then we have just the show for you.
He's become even more larger than life.
Buying Twitter doesn't get us closer to Mars.
They are like really close to the edge of like everything falling apart.
Like, oh, Elon, I volunteer, put a chip in my brain.
Each week on this podcast, we'll break down, analyze, and debate the most important stories on Musk and his empire.
It's all one big universe. You just work for Elon Inc.
From Bloomberg Businessweek, this is Elon Inc. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, Diane, I wanted to bring up a good question from a listener on Twitter and see what your thoughts are. This is, his handle is at JY Squall. And he said, I'm watching for this week's episode to understand how can the market be up when the jobless claims are skyrocketing? Now, specifically, I think I can answer his question for that day. He wrote to us on Thursday when President Trump had tweeted about his hopes for Saudi Arabia and Russia to cut oil production to bolster that market. And I think that was a big part of that bounce that day. It sort of faded as the day went on, as people realized maybe this was a little bit of wishful thinking on the president's part. But in the bigger scheme of things, you know, you see these ferocious rebounds in the middle of bear markets like we saw. In fact, you know, the Dow was technically in a bull market that, like Sarah wrote about, up 20% off its lows. I'm just trying to figure out if you have any sense of who does the buying at that point. I mean, to me, it's almost as if traders understand sort of the playbook for a bear market, that you get these huge bounces in the middle of a market that is in the longer term trending downward. I mean, do you think it's as simple as that, sort of these fast twitch traders that sort of take command of the market at times like this? when real fundamental investors may be still on the sidelines, more or less?
There is a lot of cash on the sidelines, still surprising to me, actually, considering how long and far this bull market was. But, you know, everyone likes to look in the rearview mirror, and 2008, 2009 were so horrible that a lot of people kept cash on the sidelines. What's making it very difficult for investors in the here and now is that for the last 30 days or so, the stock moves have been plus or minus 5%. That's unheard of. That's an unprecedented type of volatility. We're a big believer in dollar cost averaging. If we have found great opportunities in the market because of the sell-off, and we think the catalysts are there for the future, we wouldn't go full out and buy the biggest position we would normally hold in the portfolio. I think this is a really good strategy for all investors, you know, leg in to the position because tomorrow may be down or tomorrow might be up. So I'd like to offer that really time-tested advice. And this is there are 267 drugs in trial right now, whether to ameliorate or be a potential vaccine for the coronavirus. Something is going to work. You know, they're making do with antibiotics or old malaria drugs that are on the shelf that they're trying to dust off. But we're going to find something. And this volatility is because people just don't know. And we do need some hope and resolution in terms of the disease to help us look forward for the longer term. But I will say, in terms of your comment about, you know, how could the market be up when jobless claims are so high? The market is an anticipatory animal, and we like to look forward. I don't think anybody thinks this is going to be the peak in the jobless claims. But the markets will advance when they can see beyond that. And that's super important. Over the next 6 to 12 months, investors are looking that far out.
So you mentioned dollar cost averaging, so you can spread it out. But of course, timing the market is virtually impossible, even for some of the biggest professionals out there. But for those who are dying to try to figure out if the bottom has passed, when is best to get in, is it typically better to be earlier, or is it typically better to be late and be sure, at least, that we're headed on the way up and things are ameliorating or getting better?
That is the age-old question. I have so many clients who think, you know, exactly, you know, should I be earlier? Should I wait till everything is good? And what happens is, if you wait till everything is great, then you're afraid to invest because you think you've peaked. So, you know, value, you know, and particularly our style, we do tend to be early, but I really do love the idea of dollar cost averaging in.
That's amazing. You said 260 some drugs are in trial right now for something, either to as a vaccine, I guess, or to treat the symptoms of the virus.
You hope that one works.
It's amazing, isn't it? It brings me to a point you made in this note. Opportunistic realization of profits, meaning, you know, selling your winners when they've maybe gone a little too far, or you've at least, you know, been able to ride them a long time. And you mentioned Gilead, the stock appreciated because of has this army of antiviral medications potentially to use in the fight against this virus. I've noticed, I mean, it seems like there's been, in the midst of all this panic selling, there's been almost an irrational exuberance towards some of these drug stocks. You know, I remember the Moderna Pharmaceuticals, very small drug developer. Is that part of it with why you may have trimmed some of the Gilead stake? Are people just getting a little too excited about some of these drug makers, do you think?
Well, we still like the valuation of Gilead, and we do, you know, I'd like to think that investors, when looking for companies that might be winners here in the fight against COVID-19, when they saw that Gilead could be one of the winners, and then looked at their balance sheet and their cash flow statement, said, oh, well, that's a juicy dividend that I can feel quite confident about. That it was a two-pronged thought process for them in terms of Gilead as a stock in the portfolio. But it did run up a little bit. And while they do have an army of antiviral drugs, and in fact, you know, one of them, for example, helped cure Hep C, right? It's helping to eradicate it, which is amazing. You know, we did get a little worried that if there were too many hopes pinned on remdesivir, which is the one that is being tested in China and in the US right now, that there might be a near-term sell-off. And one of our disciplines is if stock appreciates above 5% in the portfolio, we're automatically going to scale it back because we don't want any name to be too big.
That's interesting. So you have a 5% cap on any single holding in the portfolio?
Yeah, it's proven to be a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Mike, some would say certainly, as you alluded to, that some of these moves in the healthcare names are or have been a bit crazy. So you know what time it is then.
I guess it's that time. Sarah, we got a great call over the podcast hotline. For once in my life, I have the number handy, so I'll take the pressure off of you.
This must be the only time, Mike.
This is the only time I have the number handy. So the number is 646-324-3490. So please, if you saw something crazy in the markets, give us a call, leave us a voicemail, and maybe we'll play your voicemail on the show. And if you have any other comments, we'd be very happy to hear from you. But we got a call all the way from Hong Kong, a listener named Gerald. So let's listen to what he had to say.
Hi, I'm going to cheat just a little bit, you know, like Mike. First, what I saw was a webcast from Oaktree Capital. In it, their co-founder, Howard Marks, mentioned a memo he wrote 20 years ago with a quote that says, "You cannot predict the next recession or the next market sell-off, but you can prepare for it." So full of wisdom as usual, then the crazy part hits me. Just 3 months ago, when fund managers were making their 2020 forecasts, how many times have you heard some very smart, very respectable managers say that although the market is richly valued, they could see absolutely no reason for a recession in the next 6 to 12 months? I may have heard this a dozen times on various podcasts, and I nodded every time. There was no argument from me. These are smart and successful investment professionals, but that was just 3 months ago. It is crazy how things can change on a dime like that. How far in the future can we really see?
I think he makes a great point. You think of all those look-ahead forecast pieces that people spent countless hours on, and you know, about a month into the year, they're all sort of null and void. Although I do take exception, Sarah, with him saying I cheat a little bit.
I thought you were going to say that's what you agreed with. He was calling you out, but it does remind me of one line. I won't call the shop out, but there was one line I read earlier this year that said maybe the best reason to be bullish is the fact that there's no reason to be bearish, and then you have all of this evolve, and it just goes to show really it's nothing anyone could have predicted.
Right. Yeah, Diane, I'm wondering how you handle something like that. I mean, it feels like not so long ago, everyone had to be a European political science expert to get through the debt crisis. You know, then we were all became sort of oil field experts and credit, oil credit experts, and then Iranian experts and U.S.-China trade experts. But I got to say, having to become an expert on viruses is something new. It must get overwhelming as a fund manager to try to have to react to crisis after crisis like this, especially when so many of them turned out to be sort of false alarms. And then all of a sudden you get hit by something like this. I mean, this must have been one of the more stressful episodes of your career, I would imagine.
Well, I care deeply about our clients, and my most important job, and we have a lot of dear friends in Hong Kong, my most important job is really to hold their hands during this time and say, you know, we're going to be vigilant here. We're combing through the portfolio. We're doing it for you. we're going to weed out the names that should be weeded out and make sure we're investing in the ones that will prosper for you and have power for you and your portfolio going forward. So that surprisingly comes to be called upon more often than not, the job of saying, this is our job, this is what we love to do, and we love to take care of you. You know, trust us, we're going to guide you through this and come out the other side for your investment portfolio.
Okay, Diane, I just hope you're washing your hands after you're holding all those hands, right? Sarah, what's the craziest thing you saw in markets this week?
So mine goes back to what we are discussing as it relates to earnings season. So Jonathan Golub, who we had on the podcast a while back from Credit Suisse, he had a statistic saying that last week, 17% of analysts revised their estimates. So that's actually a lot. That would amount to about 4 times a quarter or 15 times a year. So that's very high, but it's the problem is, and what's crazy is it's just not fast enough. Still, estimates continue to be stale, and it seems as though bottoms-up sell-side analysts just can't keep up with the news flow or even just try to figure out what companies are going to go about reporting. So it's just pretty crazy because we're heading into this earnings season, and we don't really have a consensus for the market to base anything off of.
I agree. I read that story of yours, Sarah. In fact, I quoted it on the Tom Keene's radio show to show you how how much I'm paying attention there. And that is, it's true, though. You think in a normal world, you would think 17% of earnings estimates were changed. That sounds like a massive number, but it seems low in this environment. You know, it seems like every single estimate out there should be changed. It's crazy. Diane, have you seen anything crazy in markets this week? I know it was a pretty calm week.
Well, we've got two conflicting stories. You know, will there be, because of cohabitation or self-quarantining with your significant other, will there be a baby boom or countered by, you know, post the major quarantine process in China, is there going to be a spike in divorce rates? And there was a Bloomberg article that said, and, you know, it's from China, so, you know, we're not sure, but that that divorce rates are ticking up steadily and that maybe they're going to put some laws into place to have a 30-day cooling off period when they go back to work and maybe say, oh, well, it wasn't so bad after.
It's crazy how it's changing everything in society, like stuff like that. You would never think, you know, it would have that big of an effect. And that reminds me, Sarah, of another crazy thing we had offered to us from our friend Ben Emmons at Medley Global Advisors. He pointed out the Bloomberg story mentioning, and Diane, you reminded me of this, talking about a baby boom. But he pointed out the story that there is a shortage of condoms in the world, I guess because because the raw materials are being used for the gloves. So, Maybe that baby boom is not such a wild idea.
It sounds crazy. But Diane, I'm actually curious. I mean, people think about demographics when you think about long-term investing opportunities. If you think of the possibility for a baby boom, could you imagine anyone out there maybe betting on that or investing based on the possibility of a baby boom coming forwards?
Of course, you know, for 9/11, there was some thought that maybe that tragedy, that horrific tragedy, would cause people to think about it. And we didn't see much of a baby boom. But when it's when it's a prolonged period of cohabitation, and I think that it wouldn't be surprising to see people either adopt pets or decide to have a family. And, you know, one of the names in our portfolio is Procter & Gamble, and certainly Pampers, you know, might be.
Right.
There you go. It's, you know, I actually did predict a baby boom on Twitter early on in this, and I was joking, but I'm going to rescind the joking part of it. I'm now going to say that was a serious.
It was
tweet.
Very early too, Mike.
In case anyone asks. That was a serious prediction, not a joke. I'm going on the record saying that. All right. Well, I'll end it with the craziest thing I saw. And God bless the New York Post. Whenever I think I've run out of crazy things in the markets, they are there. They're always there for me. And Sarah, this is interesting for two reasons. Obviously, like yourself, everyone is supposed to be staying in their apartments in New York. You're not supposed to be going out. But you're familiar with the famous statue on Wall Street of the Charging Bull, it's called.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that famous iconic statue. Well, I'm going to let the New York Post take it away here with their headline. Nude woman ignores coronavirus warnings to straddle the charging bull statue. Did you see that? So this naked woman decided to go and jump on the back of the charging bull statue.
This seems really sanitary.
I know. And I guess, look, there's no one around. I mean, no one's probably touched the bull in days. I will say she wasn't completely nude, though. I researched this. I looked at the pictures. She had a cowboy hat on. And some
in
kind
typical
of
New York fashion.
Yeah, some kind of bandana around her face. And this being the New York Post, you didn't get just one picture. You got a full 5-picture photo essay of this incident. And as the Post points out, I am cheating a little bit. The guy in Hong Kong's right. I'm cheating a little bit because this was actually last week, but it wasn't published until after we published the podcast. So I feel like I'm in the clear there.
And where's the connection to markets, Mike? I get the charging bull, but
it's the charging bull. Well, here it is. Here it is. And I'll just let you make your own conclusion based on the final sentence of the New York Post story, which says the unsanitary stunt came as U.S. stocks rallied for a third straight day, with the Dow finishing up 1,352 points.
There's the connection.
There's the connection. So they might want to get her back out there. I don't know. I'm just in case.
That's hysterical. All right. Well, I'm sure going forwards, there'll be plenty more for us to choose from and to include. But Diane Jaffe, thank you so much for joining the show this week.
Thank you, guys. It was really a lot of fun.
What Goes Up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal website and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at Sarah Ponsek, and Mike is at Reganonymous. You can also follow Bloomberg Podcasts at Podcasts. What Goes Up is produced by Topher Forges. The head of Bloomberg Podcasts is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.